The following comes from a document produced by the FBI and published on the 6th of July, 1988, made recently available by the Freedom of Information Act. This information is based on an investigative analysis of the Jack the Ripper case 100 years after the crimes were originally committed. The FBI lists 11 characteristics of the 5 confirmed Jack the Ripper killings, followed by a crime scene analysis, offender traits and characteristics, and a summarization of pre- and post-offense behaviors. The 11 characteristics shared by all 5 killings are as follows. 1. No evidence of sexual assault. 2. Subject killed his victim swiftly. 3. Subject was able to maintain control of victims during an initial blitz-style attack. 4. Subject removed body organs, kidney, vagina, nose, on some of his victims, indicating some anatomical knowledge. 5. No evidence of physical torture prior to death. 6. Post-mortem mutilation. 7. Possible manual strangulation. 8. Blood from victims was concentrated in small areas. 9. Rings were taken from one of the victims. 10. The last victim was killed indoors and was the most mutilated. Subject spent a considerable amount of time at the scene. 11. Time of death was in the early morning hours. These listed findings will contribute to the overall offender analysis that will be addressed later on in the report. The crime scene analysis is as follows. With the exception of the last case, all victims were killed outdoors. All victims were killed swiftly, with the victim consequently receiving post-mortem mutilation. All homicides occurred within 1/4 of a mile from one another and occurred either on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday during early morning hours. After the first homicide at Whitechapel Station, the subject moves slightly across town, 1/4 of a mile. If a line is drawn from crime scenes 2, 3, 4, and 5, a triangular configuration is formed. This is observed in other types of serial crimes. This triangular configuration is viewed as a secondary comfort zone for the Ripper. This movement is caused when a subject believes that the investigation is heating up in his primary comfort zone. The primary comfort zone would be the location of the first homicide in the vicinity of Whitechapel Station. It is the opinion of this crime analysis that there were other attacks in the Whitechapel area that either went unreported or for some reason were not considered by authorities to be crimes of Jack the Ripper. Some criminologists and behavioral scientists have written in the past that subjects will maintain their modus operandi, and that is what links so-called signature crimes. This conclusion is incorrect. A subject will change his modus operandi as he gains additional experience. This is a learned behavior. However, the personal desires and needs of the subject are expressed in the ritual aspect of a crime. The ritual is something that he must always do because it is the acting out of the fantasy. With Jack the Ripper, the target selection, the approach, the method of his initial attack are his modus operandi. What takes place after this is the ritual. The ritual may become more elaborate, as was in the last homicide case. Here, the Ripper had time to act out his fantasies. As investigators, we should not necessarily expect the same type of homicides in the future, particularly if subsequent victims are killed outdoors. Once again, he would not have the time to carry out all of his fantasies, and consequently mutilation will not be as advanced. Offender traits and characteristics are as follows. These homicides are referred to as lust murders. The word lust does not mean love or have any sexual meaning, other than the fact that the subject attacks the genital areas of his victims. The vaginal area and the breasts are the focal point of attack in a woman, and the penis and scrotum are the attack area of the male offender. Generally, males who are attacked in this fashion are victims that were involved in a homosexual relationship. The writer of this document states that they have never experienced a female serial lust murderer, which means they believe the perpetrator is a man. The author goes on to explain that the offender does not look out of the ordinary. However, the clothing he wears at the time of the assaults is not his everyday dress. He wants to project to unsuspecting female prostitutes that he has money. Consequently, this relieves him from initiating contact. He comes from a family where he was raised by a domineering mother and a weak, passive, and/or absent father. In all likelihood, his mother drank heavily and enjoyed the company of many men. As a result, he failed to receive consistent care and contact with stable adult role models. Consequently, he became detached socially and developed a diminished emotional response towards his fellow man. He became asocial, preferring to be alone. His anger became internalized, and in his younger years, he expressed his pent-up destructive emotions by setting fires and torturing small animals. By perpetrating these acts, he discovered increased areas of dominance, power, and control, and learned how to continue violent destructive acts without detection or punishment. As he grew older, his fantasy developed a strong component that included domination, cruelty, and mutilation of women. He would expect to find evidence of this violent, destructive fantasy life through personal writings of his, as well as drawings of women being mutilated. For employment, he would seek a position where he could work alone and vicariously experience his destructive fantasies. Such employment would include work as a butcher, mortician's helper, medical examiner's assistant, or hospital attendant. He is employed Monday through Friday, and on Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday is off from work. He has carried a knife for defense purposes, just in case he is ever attacked. He would be ready. This paranoid type of thinking is in part justified because of the poor self-image he has of himself. He would be expected to have some type of physical abnormality. However, although not severe, he would perceive this as being psychologically crippling. We would look for someone below or above average in height and or weight. May have problems with speech, scarred complexion, physical illness, or injury. We would not expect this type of offender to be married. If he was married in the past, it would have been to someone older than himself, and the marriage would have been for a short duration. He is not adept in meeting people socially, and the major extent of his heterosexual relationships would be with prostitutes. Due to lack of hygiene practices by prostitutes at that time and the absence of treatment for venereal disease, he may have been infected. If infected, this would further fuel his hatred and disgust for women. He would be perceived as being quiet, a loner, shy, slightly withdrawn, obedient, and neat and orderly in appearance when working. He drinks in the local pubs, and after a few spirits, he becomes more relaxed and finds it easier to engage in conversation. He lives or works in the Whitechapel area. The first homicide should be in close proximity to either his home or workplace. It is noted that London Hospital is only one block away from the first homicide, and as stated earlier in this analysis, we would expect other violent crimes in this vicinity. Investigators would have interviewed him during the course of the investigation, and he was probably talked to by police on several occasions. Unfortunately, at this time, there was no way to correlate this type of information. Therefore, he was overlooked. Investigators and citizens in the community had a preconceived idea or picture of what Jack the Ripper would look like. Because of the belief that he would appear odd or ghoulish in appearance, he was overlooked and/or eliminated as a potential suspect. Pre- and post-offense behavior is as follows. Prior to each homicide, the subject was in a local pub drinking spirits, while at the same time lowering his inhibitions. He would be observed walking all over the Whitechapel area during the early evening hours. He did not specifically seek a certain look in a woman. However, it was by no accident that he killed prostitutes. He had the sense to know when and where to attack his victims. There would have been many other women who confronted Jack the Ripper and were not assaulted because the location was not secure enough. Post-offense behavior would include returning to an area where he could wash his hands of blood and remove his clothing. We would not expect him to inject himself into the police investigation or provide bogus information. Jack the Ripper hunted nightly for his victims. When he could not find another, he returned to the locations where he killed his previous victims. If the victims were buried locally, he would visit the grave sites of his victims during the early morning hours for the purpose of reliving his last murders. Jack the Ripper would not have committed suicide after the last homicide. Generally, when crimes such as these cease, it is because he came close to being identified, was interviewed by police, or was arrested for some other type of offense. As stated previously in this report, we would be surprised if Jack the Ripper would suddenly stop. However, we've seen this happen before, and generally it has been because of the above-stated reasons.